My name is Jeff Merkel. I serve the village as the pastor, and I am moderating the forum tonight. The forum topic is something that is chosen by the teaching staff. And as we were thinking about some of the topics that we were exploring, the folks were exploring on teaching staff, one of the questions that came up, one of the issues that arose, was the issue of intersection between people who are here on short-term and long-term staff who are younger and people who are here as teaching staff who are further along in careers in institutions. And there was a sense that there might be actually a wall or a distance between the experience of those two groups of people. And we were thinking about that and thinking about ways that as teaching staff we could be of more service or more open to the experience of younger people in America today, especially the specific kind of young people that come to Holden Village who are, as you can imagine, a little bit more motivated than most, a little bit more engaged than most. But also searching harder in some ways than most. And so we thought it would be very interesting to gather and to ask, as teaching staff, the group is trying to kind of present topics that will enable people to come closer to God, understand their place in the world better, and all of that. But teaching staff wasn't hearing from the younger people here at Holden as to what is the experience of a 20-year-old, a 30-year-old in Holden Village or in the United States today? What are some of the things that characterize that? And where do folks who are younger today find hope? What sustains them? What keeps them going? This is a topic that's been intriguing for me as a campus pastor because I've been doing campus ministry for 12 years in a place that's extremely competitive at University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. And what I've found is that people at Penn work very competitively, very hard all week long, and on the weekend they just get wasted. That's basically the scheme. There isn't a middle ground of kind of having long conversations, falling in love, developing your interests. I mean, it's basically work as hard as you can to get ahead, and then when you run out of energy, you use drugs or alcohol or sex or something to kind of clear the deck, and then begin again on Monday morning or Tuesday morning, depending on. Another thing that is another place that this clicked in for me is my own despair about the future. As a pastor, I believe in God's power to transform desperate situations. I see in the crucifixion of Jesus, God's love going the absolute limit, trusting in Jesus' love, trusting in God's power to rescue, and even in death, God comes through. But people who talk about ecology and people talk about nuclear war tend not to have any kind of understanding of a religious component or faith component in that. And so I sort of find myself with one foot in each camp. In the ecology camp, I'm looking at, you know, depletion of species, biodiversity, pollution of the oceans and the water, and how is that going to affect our children's children 100 years from now, and what does that mean for me as a person? I think it would be even more poignant for people who are young, married, and have are starting families right now. Is that a factor in people being drawn to enduring relationships? Are there more single people today because of a sense that the future is so unclear? We do know that there are more teenage suicides than have ever been seen before. One person commits suicide in school, and all of a sudden there's five people who are committing suicide. And There's this kind of amazing fragility of young people today because of some of the stresses that are brought to bear on their lives and some lack of hope. I'm not exactly sure how to characterize all of that. In the cities also, we see an enormous amount of violence where young people are using guns and using drugs and using sex and getting AIDS. It's just remarkable. What I wanted to do before I turn the floor over to a couple of people who volunteered to talk briefly about their source of hope was to read this political cartoon that was in the paper a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, by Tolles, who draws for the Buffalo News. It's called The Reading of the Will. And it shows an older guy sitting at a desk, probably the lawyer, and then some kids, young people, sort of sitting down in the audience. And the will reads as follows. Dear kids, we, the generation in power since World War II, seem to have used up pretty much everything ourselves. We kind of drained all the resources out of our manufacturing industry, so there's not much left there. The beautiful old buildings that were built to last for centuries, we tore down and replaced them with characterless but inexpensive structures, and you can have them. Except everything we built had a lifespan about the same as ours. So, like the interstate highway system we built, they're all falling apart now, and you'll have to deal with that. We used up as much of our natural resources as we could without providing for renewable ones, so you're probably only good until about a week from Thursday. We did build a generous Social Security and pension system, but that was just for us. In fact, the only really durable thing we built was toxic dumps. You can have those. So think of your inheritance as a challenge, the challenge of starting from scratch. You can begin as soon as, oh, one last thing, as soon as you pay off the $2 trillion debt we left you. Love, your parents. And then the people over on the side here say, gee, thanks. And then as Tolles always has, he has a little character down in the bottom corner. And in the bottom corner, the old man at the desk is continuing to write, P.S., we're not dead. We're enjoying our pensions and Social Security. I just thought it was somewhat cynical, but also a little amusing. So I talked to Jamila, and Mike and Mike agreed that they would perhaps talk about, just briefly, about how they've negotiated sort of to get to where they are in terms of hope, in sense of coherence. What makes sense, what looks like it's worth betting your life on, putting your time into, and what kinds of things have been sort of different in your mind from perhaps how your parents or teachers have seen the world, thought about the world. And you don't have to, you know, speak. It can be like a conversation that we have, if one of you wants to start, and just something that you've thought about today.
Let's see. That's a mouthful. I mean, I think that I definitely agree with everything that you said, but it's kind of hard to make some kind of focus, so that I hope that we can kind of cover a lot of those issues and just kind of have a discussion about it. That's how I'd like to see it going. I think that there is a lot of despair in the younger generations, and it's kind of difficult to come to a grasp of values or meaning of what's important, whether it's a career or a job or the environment or family or a spiritual enlightenment. And that a lot of what the younger generations have been fed, and a lot of what their despair is they're searching for their own definitions and not necessarily the definitions that their parents or grandparents have taught them. And so a lot of experimentation with drugs or sex or violence comes out of trying to find or define a place where they feel comfortable or accepted or willing, especially younger teenagers, I think. And I think that a lot of a positive mechanism for it in my mind that I was just thinking about a minute ago when you were talking came to mind would be that if there was a way that people could, younger and older generations, I think, feel empowered as one person to feel that what their life does make a difference in the whole of you, because, you know, we get fed so much, you know, murder here, war here, and, you know, your friend just breaks up with your girlfriend or whatever, everything is just pouring in and you feel like you're powerless. Mm-hmm. And I definitely see that growing over probably the past 50 years. I mean, 50 some years ago, there weren't even televisions, and people went out after school and played baseball and had, you know, personal relationships, and now so much of it, technology is a big part, I think, that has really sped up the kind of brainwashing or just downloading of a lot of information of this is what you should see or feel or believe or want to be, and there's just so much coming at you that it's really hard to get a feel for what you want and what you value and what gives you meaning. And so if there's some way, I think, and I think Holden is really good at doing this, at helping people look at what is meaningful for them and what they value, and then going and reaching out to other people and talking to them about issues. Well, what does this mean to you? Or you have a gun. Why do you have a gun? Mm-hmm. Why do you feel that you need that? Mm-hmm. I'm kind of just rambling, but so I think that if there's a way that people can, and young people feel empowered that their lives do matter and what they do decide to do with them makes a difference for the future. Mm-hmm. And I think that, so that I just said that to get the conversation going. I think we should all.
Right. Well, I'll pick up on something you said then. You said how people watch TV and maybe 50 years ago, whatever, they get together and play baseball in the afternoon or something. And I thought about this afternoon after you asked me to say something about hope. And I kind of boiled it down to what I think is a really cheesy statement, and it's really disappointing to me, but nevertheless, I guess I just feel that for me, what gives me hope, and I guess I can't really speak for my generation or anything certainly like that, but is just simply being with people who, you know, feeling loved and being with people who love you, and I can only speak for myself. And so, and that's something I think that hasn't been, maybe has, you know, I think there's been the breakdown of the community perhaps, and, mm-hmm. And that's what I was getting at.
Right.
And yeah, if you go home and watch TV, I like TV, so I'm not going to look on TV. But if people abuse that and then they fail to have a community. And I think having grown up in suburbia, I think I can go ahead and criticize it. I think that's a really poor place for communities to be established. I know that the people who lived next door to myself when I was in my teen years, one of the people there, you know, killed himself with a shotgun, you know, and I didn't even know that person, and I didn't know that, you know, I didn't know anything about it. I just heard about this. Hmm. And, you know, and that's not community for sure. And that's what, and you talked about Holden, and that's what I think you do find at Holden. I mean, people come here and they become hopeful, and I think that's because they're around, they're receiving love from so many people, and I think that's basically what, where I get hope from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've been accused by several friends of mine back at school of being overly cynical and overly pessimistic. But as a member of the so-called Generation X, whatever that means, you know, as a 22-year-old fresh out of college, it's almost hard not to be pessimistic. I spent my teen years in the 80s. And I can't even seem to identify with, I mean, I've been doing minors for the past month here at Holden. I can't sometimes identify with 16, 17-year-olds. I can't even understand how their thinking works. And I'm 22, you know, that was 5 years ago. That was that age. And that difference in those 5 years that have occurred is so spectacular. It's
the difference.
It's unbelievable to me that the differences that I see. And I think the whole community aspect, you know, we can play our little role here at Holden, you know, have our little community. And it's an amazing place, and it's changed me in my 3 months. I can't imagine what it's going to be come next October, after my year here. But I think, what do I do then?
What do you mean? What is the differences that you can see?
It's personal. It's for me.
Well, I mean, with the younger.
With the younger generation?
Uh-huh.
It's so many things. It's petty things like music.
Uh-huh.
Seriously, you know, the music of that generation, if I can say that.
You haven't aged prematurely, have you?
No, but it's very strange.
I think I've gone through about 8 waves of that.
Yeah, I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
I mean, I talked to 14, 15-year-olds about television shows that we grew up on, and they've never heard of them. And I can finally understand what my parents mean when they say, "I feel old." And I feel silly saying that, but there it is. And when I first went to school, went to college, you know, I was idealistic. I was green. I had no idea what the world was really about. I had my own experiences that really changed my life when I was a kid. And now I see the idealism of the teens in this country. And I don't want to say it scares me, but I just feel that the way it's heading.
The idealism?
Just the whole attitude sometimes. They don't. Oftentimes, and even people of our generation, they just sometimes don't get it that in 10 years we're going to be running for president, we're going to be the senators, mm-hmm. we're going to be heads of business, we're going to be the ones paying the debt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be our world, and they don't seem to understand that. They don't understand what's going on in our inner cities. They don't understand the incredibly poor condition of education in this country. People just don't understand it. And that's what
They don't take it seriously.
They don't take it at all seriously. Mm-hmm. And I've had discussions with minors, mm-hmm. Trying to explain to a 16-year-old kid about Hunger Awareness Day here in Poland. Mm-hmm. He didn't understand it. I said, you know, we're in solidarity with our brothers and sisters who don't have enough food. He said, well, of course they have enough food. No, they don't. You know, it's simple. We save $7,000 and give it to Wenatchee Food Shelf. You know, it's not that we go hungry. You know, we just eat rice. You can eat as much as you want, but you don't go hungry. It's just very simple. He just didn't understand that. Mm-hmm. The fact that, you know, well, I'm 22. I graduated from a very good liberal arts college. I went to St. Olaf College. And I'm not guaranteed a job when I leave Poland. Mm-hmm. You know? There's no guarantee that I'm going to be able to do anything with my life. You know? And he said, well, it's easy. Just get a job.
Flipping burgers.
And I said, well, what about the inner city? You know, that's where unemployment is, you know, 20, 25, 30% unemployment. And I said, well, they just graduate, you know, graduate from high school and go to college. Mm-hmm. How? Mm-hmm. How do you do that? Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't, people aren't willing to open their eyes. And you need to have experiences where you serve other people.
But don't you think kids, though, that are 14 and 15, they're so involved in growing up in their own little personal things that the outer world is, you know, that's something they're really not ready to deal with.
Yeah, I think so. But I think a good point to say is that a lot of this is an American culture kind of a thing, because in many other countries there are rituals that take place where at a certain age, you go through a maturity ritual or whatever, and you go from being a child to becoming an adult. And in this culture, I mean, you're 18 and you're legally an adult, but I don't really feel that there was, you know, creatively, I made a decision where, okay, I need to be serious, I need to take life a little more seriously and become more mature. But I think in a lot of ways, America and American culture doesn't have, you know, a maturing process within its culture. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, each individual does that at their own space and time, or maybe never does.
How about, let's hear from people who work with younger people. Are there any teachers here or people who are in any kind of education or counseling of younger adults? Yeah, maybe we could hear something from you guys as to what your perceptions are being in a different generation, looking back on some of the struggles and some of the challenges of being younger, being 20. Many of you have children also who are going through these processes. Do you, to involve you folks as well, do you see things about your children's lives that are vastly different than yours, or are they pretty similar? I mean, is there a change in the era, or is it just a question of having to cope with you have to cope now with computers instead of simply coping with, you know, a 49 Ford or, you know, 55 Chevy engine?
My name is Darius, and I would like to just reflect on what you mentioned. It was very interesting. It's around the ritual, mm-hmm. and celebrating maturity. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm 45, and I'm celebrating maturity, always celebrating maturity. And it's a ritual at certain points. And what's always particular in American society vis-a-vis others, other culture, and I travel extensively around the world working for government at one point. America sort of lost the touch with the ritual except in certain ethnic groups. And things just sort of spin out of control here. When I was teaching in Monterey, it was a college for it's called Montreal Institute of International Studies. Mm-hmm. And it's a sort of combination of American kids who traveled. They usually come to the Institute for graduate study after serving a Peace Corps or being around the world. or chair of the State Department personnel or Foreign Service. So they speak languages, they've been exposed to culture and things like that. And they've been much more aware of what's they are and what the world is all about, being fluent in other culture. And well, to concise it, I think America, United States in particular is the leader in computer technology. Take away the ritual of maturing. I remember back in Bosnia when I went to school, we didn't have no, well, we have radio, but we didn't have no TV, there was no computer. We used to socialize a lot and playing chess. And a big stress was to learn how to think, how to use the universal gift that you had, without using all those tools, you know, like, I was just watching the friends packing the door in college, and you see Santa Cruz, and I couldn't believe it. There's this Aptiva computer, you know. I mean, you know, all the things were secondary. I remember when I was teaching, the students were so much caught up in how to write a paper and footnotes and how it should be properly written, research paper and so on. And the substance of paper wasn't there, mm-hmm. because they never learned how to think with their own head, and how to utilize that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm taking a little bit too long.
Well, good. No, that's helpful. But other people, reflections on being young today and seeing the kinds of goals and challenges that young people have from a point of view of being a little older. Yeah.
I don't have children or anything, but my husband taught, and it seems like it's a lot. But it seems that children just have too much these days. They just don't have to want for anything, and people just give them toys and toys and more toys and whatever they want, and I don't think they have any values. I don't think they have any sense of money. It just seems like whatever they want, they get.
So it's the kids' fault or the parents' fault? Or?
I don't really think. I think it's probably a lot of it's the parents' fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, other folks?
I don't think that's true in every situation, but...
No, but it's pretty widespread. I know it's really upset a short time ago. I was with some friend, and her grandchildren were along, and they were in the back seat talking, a little six-year-old girl who goes to Sunday school, church, and she was playing with her doll, and she says, "I'm going to kill you. I'm just going to kill you." And they're, mm-hmm. I would have never thought of saying such a thing mm-hmm. when I was small. And it's just, and you think, where do they, and of course, I guess that's from TV or different things, but it was just amazing to me that that would be part of her playing.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's always been, I mean, it's clear that there's always been what Mike talks about, you know, parents can't quite figure out why kids are behaving the way they are, and that's. That was happening in the 40s and the 30s and the 20s. There's always a need for young people to kind of discover their own identity. But many say that what we see today is really a kind of sea change in that, where actually kids are committing suicide, where kids are taking guns to school, where kids are just not even aspiring. I mean, it used to be in the 60s that you'd rebel for a while, and then you'd come back, you know, and you'd get your degree, finish your degree, and move on in your life. But it's said today that a lot of people just aren't doing that. They aren't motivated to pursue it. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. That's kind of what the question is here. I mean, I remember 10 years ago being at Holden, and you know, the teaching sessions were filled with young people. Here, the teaching sessions aren't filled with young people. I mean, the kids are out there working hard. They're making friends. Kids, I mean, the 20-year-old people. And there's a there's at least in my mind there's something different going on, and I'm not sure what that is. And I think that's important for us to figure out at Holden, because the Holden is a community, and if in fact what the teaching sessions are about are not helping younger folks here who are struggling in various ways or just not interested in various ways, then that needs to be communicated, you know.
I think the world that I was a young person in was really different than the world that young people are in today. There was a value. There was something about the context where there was a struggle between good and evil, and the young people identified with searching for the good and wanting the ideals and trying to triumph those ideals. And that was easy to have it. You know, there was the Vietnam War, and there was protests, and there was hippie ideals and love and that kind of stuff. And I think the world today is much more complex, overwhelming, and it's just like Jesus keeps barraging you, keeps coming at you. And I have to remember that I grew up in a world where future shock was a new thing, where it was described as this oncoming thing. So I come from a reality where it wasn't yet happening too much, and it was something I had to adjust to. And most of you have grown up in a reality where it's been all around you all the time. And for me, at my age, and I'm 43, something that has been sort of an evolution is the realization that, and this goes back to what you were saying,
Mike,
yeah, about the love, is the realization that the things that are really very simple. And all of this barrage of stuff that keeps coming our way, this tremendous barrage of information, is superfluous, much of it, to what really matters, which is relationship and love and community. And to me, what is the heart of Jesus' gospel, which is relationship with God, relationship with each other, the love, the friendships. Those are the things that really satisfy, and the rest is window dressing. But I think it's much harder to arrive at that these days, because there's so much flying at us, and for young people, so much flying at you. I mean, the things that I had to come to terms with as a young person, which was, what is going to be my role in life, work-wise? What am I going to do with my major productive energies? Things like finding my main relationship, where am I going to live? I think those things were easier to figure out then than they are now. So I mean, those are some differences for me.
And the work is definitely changing, I think, because I think the idea of having one career and being happy with that is gone.
Marie?
The highest element of despair that I see right now in young people that are in their 20s, and I have a 27-year-old daughter and a 25-year-old daughter, that they express to me as their mom and feel out a lot of questions with me also as a teacher, is that they can't see within their lifetime one of the most cherished things that they want as women is the availability to stay home with their children. And they cannot figure out how they can take a liberal arts degree from Bowdoin College with a double major cum laude in French and psychology and a double major from Holyoke College in art history and studio art and make that happen in their lives. The oldest one now is at the point where that she was married the 22nd of July, and she is doing a complete switch around to think about going back to school, or some way, somehow, she can piece together a quality of life that she can create and take the risk in an entrepreneurial sense to start a business so that she can be assured that when she decides to have a family, that she will be able to stay home and breast that, feed that baby if she chooses to. Mm-hmm.
Stability.
And it's extremely painful for your forthcoming interests, and I'm sure for yours, Mike, and for yours at some point in time in your life. And I empathize with them. And I feel as though it's a despair for myself also, because I want that to happen for them. But I don't know how to put the pieces together for them also.
That's
I think
tough.
That young people that I work with in guidance and counseling many times express to me that they have too many choices, and the choices come at them and bombard them, and they don't know how to pick and choose. They don't know how to make realistic goals that will in turn fit the parental expectations that their parents have for them. So many of the young people that I work with come from homes and backgrounds where once the child has entered into kindergarten, the parent will ask me, is this going to be my part want to get this kid into Harvard?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that expectation is just way, way too high. The child needs to have a choice that needs to have some guidelines also. I know in Bible study you mentioned boundaries today, and I think boundaries for young people
mm-hmm.
are very, very important
mm-hmm.
in our parenting that we do. We have to set some non-negotiables for our young people. We cannot allow them to have 6 glasses of water because they're going to cry from their crib. At some point in time, it might be worthy to parent and take the child back out of the crib and rock them for a little bit and do a little more nurturing. They have to be shown and exposed that Ninja Turtles are not the very best thing in the world, and taking them to a library and exposing them to Beatrice Potter books might be a healthier way. And I think that fits in with boundaries and parenting, having to do with choices, negotiability, and letting them grow from being a dependent person to an independent person.
Don wanted to say something.
I just want to switch it a little bit and talk as a 60-year-old and kind of take it off you a little bit, because it seems to me that 60-year-olds are also pretty pessimistic and don't see much sign of hope for the future. That's why many of them take early retirement. Whenever they can, they buy themselves out of the job, because they don't see much hope for the future in that work. And so they don't like their work. They hate what they're doing. They find the change is just too much for them. And so that, I mean, it isn't only university students that turn to drugs and alcohol. I mean, so that it seems to me that it's easy for us to kind of focus on the question about how the young folk are pessimistic about the society, but it seems to me that that kind of pessimism extends to lots of places,
Yeah, it's just that
people have had hopes and dreams about what is to, how fulfilling a job would be, and then at 45 discover it wasn't fulfilling at all. It's true they might have some material stuff for the time being, and I suppose that that's kind of a question that youth may not be able to face and guess. But I don't see a lot of optimism. I mean, I don't see even in the church, I don't see a lot of pastors who are very gung-ho about the institution of the church and say, wow, am I ever happy to belong to whatever church I belong to. They may be happy about their parishes, but they're certainly not happy about the institutions. I don't know hardly anybody who's happy about government and has any hope at all in government and what government may do. I think most of us are desperately afraid of economic decline in the world, and we know that that's probably going to happen. I mean, I speak not as an American, but as a Canadian. But I feel, and we all feel, that we are going to be in North America, in the North American continent, in an economic decline, and armaments will not save us in any way in that kind of a situation. Mm-hmm. So that we are also really, I hate to come to classes. I mean, it's good that I
think you weren't here this morning.
I know, I wasn't.
Well, that means the young people in the next generation are going to have to be creative.
Well, I don't think it's only young people. I think there's just a pack of other folk who are in this kind of thing, and that we are in some ways, I don't know how we can discover that we're in it together.
Well, I think one of the dilemmas is that most of the power right now does reside in the older folks.
Right.
I mean, people that are 50 to 70. You see it in Congress right now. I mean, the decisions that are being made, building prisons instead of schools. I mean, that's a kind of decision about how to manage youth, how to manage young people, and it's basically saying young people should. Instead of giving them schools and paying teachers more, we're building prisons for them. And that's a decision that feels good to older folks. And I think, you know, we do have to work together creatively, but I think young people feel so cut out of it that it's so hard. I mean, you vote, but you don't feel like your vote makes a difference. You can campaign, but it's not like campaigning from a governance, you know, in 72. I mean, that... You really felt you could do something. People who campaign now don't. I'd like to, I don't know if you feel comfortable, Margot and Jim, talking about your kind of search as you've been in a number of places, worked in a number of places. And Margot, going to India, I mean, that strikes me as being a profoundly hopeful kind of thing.
I did the sort of normal college thing, drank myself silly on the weekends, and, you know, was going to be a country club wife and that kind of thing. And it's really, I think my hope has really come only in the last 6 or 7 years of discovering my faith, discovering what a spiritual journey, the spiritual journey that I'm on, discovering that I was on a path and to continue walking along it. And I think we've, you know, as Jim and I have been married since we were 25, about 6 years now. And I think in that time, we've done some things that are not understandable to our parents and families, but I think we ourselves feel a lot of hope for our future, and maybe part of that is that we haven't, we're not expecting to make a lot of money in our lives, and we're not expecting a lot of financial security necessarily in our lives, but the security of sort of being on a path, you know, we found mm-hmm. a little bit mm-hmm. of our path, and we're kind of going for that. And that's where our security is. So, mm-hmm. you know, sitting here thinking, gosh, you know, we haven't, we don't have an IRA, or you know, we haven't made much money in the time we've been out of school, and you know, I think about that a lot, more than I wish I did, but I'm thinking about kids, you know, having mm-hmm. kids. We decided we want to do that too, and that's a scary proposition in itself. And we sort of already know we're not going to be making a lot of money.
Right.
But
right.
Beyond all that, I think, you know, generally, we're pretty hopeful people, and mm-hmm. I thank God for that.
Yeah. Well, and also at some point, I have hope that down the road when Social Security is out and people don't have IRAs because they have walked down their own path, that, you know, creatively something else will come up where those people, where we do take care of each other mm-hmm. and we mm-hmm. all have skills that we can give to survive, you know, and I don't think it's going to be easy at all. I think it is the harder path. It's not the norm. It's not the system. But I think that's a lot of what the younger people are dealing with, is what gives that meaning is not, I mean, it's not the mainstream right now. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it'll be a challenge, but I'm optimistic.
Yeah, Francois.
One of the things that I noticed as a teenager, and I'm past that now, obviously, but I really feel like I was struggling with exactly the same things that you all are struggling with. Because I'm female, because I was at that time not real clear on how to pursue in terms of choosing a life other than I knew it would have something to do with music and who knew what. But for whatever reasons, I felt that there were a lot of avenues that weren't available to me. The point I want to make here is really has more to do with the expectations that our culture, that my generation grew up with, because I grew up in the 50s, and we grew up with this real cushy middle class, life is cool and things are groovy, and then the 60s came and blew everything apart. But it was sort of like, oh, it was fine, and then it wasn't fine, and it's going to be fine again. And I think it's real important to look at the 50s and recognize that that decade was an anomaly in history, mm-hmm. and what's happening is, frankly, we're returning to what's more normal, is that the middle class is shrinking, and there are a few rich and lots of more people. I know I'm painting a really horrible picture here, but there's another trend that's happening at the same time that I think really puts kind of a screw into your belly, which is, not only are we looking at this economic shrinking situation, but we have this psychology that says, you can do anything. You've got so many options, but you can go out there and you can pilot an airplane if you want to, or, you know, or compose a symphony, or you can do it. And sort of like the attitude, or the popular attitude is, you know, you're capable, you can do anything you want to. And the fact of the matter is, economically, you can do damn little. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of the despair has to do with letting go a false understanding of what it was we were supposed to have been able to have. Mm-hmm. And I think your generation is frankly better equipped to deal with it because you didn't have it as well.
And what are we trying to recapture? I mean,
economic security, IRAs, social security.
You turn on Leaving to Beaver, you know, you see the 50s, but they don't show the other side of town either.
Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, they also,
you know, yeah. You know, it's pretty ignorant for us to believe that it was all like that.
Like
it was all
like
rosy.
It wasn't like
exactly.
That.
You know,
that's the way life.
This picture is being painted for our generation of the 50s. You know, life under Ike. You know, well, the same thing probably happened in the 30 years of the 80s under Reagan. You know, it was this rosy time.
One thing that's in realized while listening to everyone, it's sorry, I didn't know everyone there. like condition changed 20 years, 40 years from now, what's our today. But our fears are the same. I mean, what's you fear, what's I fear at 45, or what's you fear are the same. And I wonder if our hopes are, you know, related to our fears, if our hopes are the same, you know, mm-hmm. how we could make this world better and where we should look for the betterment of our own a life and a world mm-hmm. at large. Mm-hmm. And in my own why I'm here in Holland today is because I realized for myself it's this mundane and transitory stuff is career, job, money, and so on really are not that important. You know, prestige and car and mm-hmm. and career particularly. Right now is a big thing in my career, you know. You have to have PhD now, it's to get a job, you know, 20 years ago, BA, we do it, mm-hmm. Or BS, whatever. For me, it's really what's mattering is to how I could deal with my fears and let go of it, let God do, mm-hmm. let God and not me. Mm-hmm. Because I'm source of fears, I could worry about everything. I just got back from a client who is devastated. Mm-hmm. You know? And only people who survive are people with hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they have strong faith. Mm-hmm. And in this country, I think that hope is become so abstract, it's not anymore that you could. I don't know how to express it. Feel, you know, mm-hmm. have to be extreme pain that you feel hope. If there's no pain, you know. Mm-hmm. I think I'm making sense of it myself.
It feels really good to have people of my parents' age and older, my grandparents' age, particularly some of you in this room right now, to say that you understand how we feel, what Marty said. You know, she can understand how her daughters are dealing with being a part of this generation, what we have to look forward to. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that I've noticed a lot in the past couple of years, my last couple of years of school, and this summer here at Holden. The pressure, you know, to say, people ask me, what are you studying? I'm studying theology. Oh, so you're going to be a minister. No. Well, then what are you going to do with it? That's the next question they always ask. What are you going to do with it? What is that worth? How are you going to get a job with that? That's not important to me. I mean, it's important to get a job, but that attitude of it's all making money and, you know, and it's the basic day-to-day, you know, go to work 9 to 5, have the dog and the cat and the kids, you know, sit in front of the TV at night. It just doesn't appeal to me. And even my parents, my grandparents, they sometimes don't understand how we're looking at life. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm incredibly idealistic, I don't know. But even this summer, you talk about teaching staff here. I've gone to, you know, some sessions, but I haven't felt really that any of them have been terribly useful to me. I feel there's very much an attitude of both here and outside with many people that, with the older generations, that we are only to learn from them. It's not a two-way street. Mm-hmm. And to have someone say that you learn from me, but I can't learn anything from you, mm-hmm. is really hard to take. Mm-hmm. Sure, I haven't fought a war. My generation hasn't fought a war. You know, we haven't been through the Depression, we haven't been through the 60s. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that we don't have our own issues, our own problems. We're looking forward to them. Mm-hmm. We're not looking behind at them. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to have that communication between the generations. And it's nice to hear that there's understanding for what the younger generation here are going through and what they'll have to deal with in the next 40, 50 years of their adult life.
Hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder about, I remember doing some reading in this area of areas in which civilization, our society, civilization needs to grow. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, for me, it's easy to peg a criticism of educational infrastructure or educational setup, because I think it has failed on some very broad levels. It has failed the needs of our society and of young people. I think our educational institutions don't do a number of things. They don't take it as their responsibility to prepare young people to have a place and a function in the world that A, is supporting, self-supporting, and contributive to the culture. It's too much study for its own sake rather than the application of it, and will it fit what the world is? That's one thing. There's also not another thing that's not addressed is how to find satisfaction and fulfillment in the process of living. How to both survive and find satisfaction and fulfillment in living. And then there's even a deeper level, which is this, how to find and tap spiritual resources for why we're here and what we're doing, that the love that is. Our educational institutions don't do those things. And in today's world, I think those things are crucial. And who's going to provide that kind of growth and training?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's an ideology underneath the American system, which is, you know, the capitalistic understanding that money is important and buying is fun, and being able to, you know, have as your own what you see on television is fun. So that's an educational system that's running all the time, and it's able to run all the time because we in fact don't have a religious based educational system. The churches are supposed to do the spiritual education. You know, that was the original concept of the founding foreparents. But it really doesn't work, because once capitalism figures out that it can create desires and then benefit from creating those desires, it has basically taken over. So you know, that I think that's a useful critique. It's just that the churches are allowed to do this stuff, but they're not given any money, and they can't really sell their goods. I mean, what goods do they have to sell?
Well, I guess I would have to disagree. I mean, in that, I think it's good and proper that the government and the spiritual upbringing of our youth are kept separate. And I just see that as a failure of the church.
Right.
In terms of what goods do they have to offer? Well, let's see, salvation, that's the big good. And it seems that there should be some way to sell that.
It's Jesus' death. It's Jesus' death and resurrection. It's not you know, a plastic toy or a new BMW, you know.
Yeah, right. Sure.
In order to be part of it, we have to die too. We have to connect with that, and we have to be in solidarity with the poor and the suffering. And so it really is In terms of maturity, it requires an enormous level of maturity and a kind of love, that the love that you're talking about, that's what the church should be doing. It should be kind of embracing people and saying, it's going to be hard, but it's going to bring you to life.
Right. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying that I see the church is failing in that aspect. I mean, in terms of not getting out there.
That's what Don has been trying to do the last few weeks is to talk about how the church did that back in the times when the church was really in persecution, and to try to resurrect that today in communities of faith, so that people really can sense that Christ's presence is embracing them in movements like baptism and in communion and in serving the people around the church and in the world. But it is, I think the church has been undercut mostly by capitalism, fostering a kind of individualism so that, you know, each of us wants to be free and separate and have control of our own time and money and energy and, you know, all of that stuff. So we can't join ourselves. You know, how much am I going to give up to be your friend? You know what I mean? How much am I going to give up to be able to live near you for the rest of my life, you know, so that we can be a church? How much am I willing to give up? You know, not much. And to be the church, you got to be willing to give your whole life. So as an American, I'm being taught not to to withhold, but as a Christian, I'm being taught that everything that's worth anything has already been given to me, and I need to give it back.